People aren't interested in our personal lives. Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the Friends Who Like Stuff podcast, where we talk to our friends about the stuff we like. I'm John.
And I'm James.
And each week we're joined by a third co-host to join in on our discussion.
And this week, it's our dear friend who also likes stuff.
Evan.
You're doing that on purpose, Evan.
Was that a good pause? Evan,
that was a good pause. We are so glad to have you on, Evan.
I'm glad to have you on, to be able to hear you well. So this is our third time trying this, everybody, because we've been having some technical difficulties.
I don't know why every time I record, we have technical difficulties. Do you all have technical difficulties with the other guys?
Not as often.
No.
Yeah, of course not.
We'll figure out something else for you, too. So how have you been, man?
I had a what do we call this night? We went to my oldest, like a welcome to middle school night. So we toured the middle school, talked about what classes he's going to take next year. He gets to pick electives. And so, yeah, it was a fun night that was kind of combined with terrifying and exciting and anxious. And so, yeah, fun.
That's a scary age.
Absolutely. So, Evan, tonight we are going to be talking about books because we have discussed before how we are all fans of books. I know that you have not always been a fan of books, though, right?
Yeah, I remember I read a lot of Hardy Boys growing up, like voraciously in elementary school. And in my school district growing up was like for K through 4 was elementary and then 5 and 6 was intermediate. And I guess I didn't think it was cool anymore, and so I quit reading. And I think I can say honestly from middle school, intermediate school, 5th, 6th grade, middle school, 7th, 8th, and high school, 9th through 12th, I read 2 books, and those are going to come up later. But yeah, I just didn't do the assigned readings and somehow survived.
It was high school. James, what about you? Had they invented the printing press then, or was it
no reading scrolls?
So we do know after our game of timeline the other night that the printing press was invented in the 15th century.
That's right.
So yes, they did have books when I was a kid, and I really enjoyed reading. I didn't learn to talk good though.
The grammar didn't come from just the absorption of your reading.
No, it did not. Now, Evan, you read a lot now. Yeah.
I do read a lot now. I usually am reading a book that I picked, a book that I'm required to read for school, and a book maybe you would call it professionally, so something for work. And so I'm usually reading 3 books, but they're different enough that there's no getting confused. 2 of them are almost always nonfiction. Look, as much as I have read, I still get nonfiction and fiction backwards, but one is almost always fiction.
There you go. So you said you do some for school. That's because you're becoming a doctor.
I am, but not like a real doctor, but I am spending a lot of money to throw a couple letters on the front of my name.
That's great. Oh. I always like having doctor friends so that I can get advice from them. I'm going to have you look at a mole later.
Yep. I do prostate exams as well.
Sweet. Hey, what's your number 5?
So I should say my number 6, because this is my 6th through 2nd favorite book, because obviously the Bible is my number 1.
Right.
I can't believe there you guys don't like the Bible. But my 6th favorite book on my list is a book called Love Does by Bob Goff. This was one of those books that just made me happy. And I'm going to be honest, I'm a bit of a cynic. And so there were parts of me, I was reading it with a group of students, that I thought this can't be true. Like, it's just too fantastical.
I know.
What occurred to me after I read it, though, is how many opportunities I have to go out of my way to be kind every day that I just ignore. And so I'm like, actually, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and I'll be made a fool of if it comes out that it was all made up, and I'll eat crow, whatever. I'm going to go out and just go, yeah, he did all these things, because he just is kind when he has the opportunity. But yeah, I loved that book. It really, really worked on me.
Man, I'm with you. That was such a great book. Bob Goff he can't be real but I'm with you that I've got to believe that it happened. But it just makes you want to be a better person.
Do y'all ever ask people questions with the intent of giving the answer that you've already thought of for that question? I'll give an example. Have y'all ever met Bob Goff?
I have not, but I have his phone number.
Oh, I have. So I met Bob one time, and he had the nerve to stick his hand out and say, "I'm Bob, what's your name?" as if I didn't know who he was. And I genuinely think it doesn't even occur to him that we all know who he is and we're all enamored by him. He's the most down-to-earth person I've ever met. That's not true. I met more down-to-earth people than him, but he's really down-to-earth for someone who's written multiple major, major bestsellers.
That's awesome. Where did you meet him?
At a conference. He was speaking, and we were hanging out outside, and he walked up and just started shaking people's hands and introducing himself, which was even more so like, you're the headliner in 40 minutes, and you're telling me your first name as if I didn't pay for this thing to watch you.
At least, you know what? When you write a paper about him now, you can use his first name.
There's not a lot of seminary papers revolving around Bob Goff. Maybe there ought to be more.
There should be. So, John, have you ever read Love Does?
Never.
It's incredible. It's just a bunch of short stories, snippets of things that happened in his life and how he was kind. But at the very end of it, he gives his phone number. And we have a friend who was reading it with a group of guys that they decided that they were going to call the phone number after they finished the book. And he answered, and they talked for like 15 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
He talked with my youth group for about 10 minutes in Starbucks when we finished the book. We called him.
That's nuts. So we tried to call him after we finished the book and he didn't answer.
Yeah. Now it's a automated voice message thing.
Great, great choice, Evan. John, what's your number five?
My number five goes
or six.
All... No, definitely. Mine's just number five. No, I'm just kidding. I forgot what the number one was. I was thinking in my head, because Evan put two number fives, and so I didn't know which one he'd go for. But anyway, mine goes back to... It's not the origin of my love of books, because that happened in first grade when I read Charlotte's Web. I think that was the one that did it. Anthropomorphic animals, you know, the whole deal. This one solidified my love of fantasy epics. And this is the book called Redwall by Brian Jakes. I loved his use of detail. It's about anthropomorphic animals that like kind of live in like a medieval-y times, and the different animals all have different, you know, characteristics and traits. Like the mice are usually small, quick creatures. So like the weapons that they all carry like weapons and stuff. And Redwall is like a monastery where lots of these creatures kind of congregate and come together. And it gets attacked quite a bit, actually, in the 21 books that are centered around this monastery or this abbey. But so like the mice carry like rapiers, the otters are like kind of scoundrelly, the badgers are like these big hulking, like known for their just massive strength and bloodlust whenever they're on the battlefield. So it sounds really nerdy, and it kind of is, but it's really neat too. Redwall is not the first book in the series. However, it kind of encapsulates the rest of the books because it is kind of where Redwall, the actual location, becomes more central to the rest of the books. And I don't know, it was nice having lots of books that kind of centered around the same thing. Some of them tied together, some of them didn't. It also is the first book that I remember reading by a British author where they start like describing all the foods that they're eating and stuff.
So like, yeah, that was what I was about to say. That's the biggest takeaway. Like very few authors will actually really take the time to describe food the way Brian Jakes does.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It literally made me hungry. Like sometimes, like, so I, every night I'd read and it'd be, you know, from 8 PM to 1 AM or something like that. But like in the middle of the night, while I was reading these books, when it came across the thing, I'd go and like get a piece of bread and a piece of cheese and some milk and just like act like I was like eating alongside these creatures at these feasts that they were having. And man, there's another book on my list that kind of it talks a lot about food too.
Did you say how old you were when you read these?
This would have been fifth grade until probably like fourth or fifth grade to seventh grade, where whenever I was really into all these books.
Yeah, so my son is a big time reader. Just found a series he just finished, probably the first time he's finished a series and been like upset that it was over. But this sounds like something that he'd get a kick out of.
Oh, it's awesome.
Check out the library and see if it's there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I was in college.
It's okay.
That's great. And you said that Redwall was not the first book?
Chronologically, at least. It probably was the first book that he wrote. But chronologically, it's like the ninth book or something like that.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Because he had quite a few out whenever I started reading it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I highly recommend it. It's a great book, and I really love the details that he uses, and he has a lot of action in there and violence, but it's like it's done fantastically for what it is. It doesn't get like so super graphic or anything.
Yeah.
And I mean, characters like get injured or like die, but it's not, you know, too much for the younger reader, the preteen readers.
Love it. Another good choice.
Mm-hmm.
So for my number five, I wanted to keep it to only one religious book. And even though that's probably the largest genre of books that I have read in my life, we have a group that meets every week to discuss whatever book that we're currently reading at that time. And Evan is a part of that group. And that's where we're reading right now. We're reading N.T. Wright's Into the Heart of Romans. But one of the other books that we read in this time was Jesus Between the Lines by Scott Sauls. And the major gist of this book is that us versus them isn't healthy, right? It's often.
What did you say the title was?
Jesus Outside the Lines.
There you go. You said Jesus Between the Lines. It's the opposite. Yeah, Jesus Outside the Lines. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I don't know why I said Jesus Between the Lines. I said that earlier, too, whenever I was talking about it. Jesus Outside the Lines. But it's about us versus them and how it's not healthy as believers or as anybody. And often it's on us because we're hooked on outrage porn. Like, we seek out stories that make us feel somehow wronged and feed our righteous indignation, and over time that devours us. And in a pretty divided time, especially in contentious election years, I don't know when the next one of that's going to be, Christians need to be reminded that Jesus, the one that we claim to follow, is simultaneously farther right than the most conservative person you know, and further left than the most liberal. It's also just a reminder to love well in the midst of polarization while not taking part in said polarization. And that's so much easier said than done, because I thrive on outrage. So, well, thrive is probably not the correct word, but I live on outrage. And so that's something that I have to be reminded of often. But this book really, really helped form some ideas that I try to work on. And it is a great book. While reading it, it's something I need to reread soon.
Yeah, I think it came out around the 2016 election cycle. I think that's when I read it. It was before I moved here. But really well done and a good reminder, particularly in election cycle. But now we don't leave the election cycle, so read it whenever you want.
Exactly.
All right, so my number four is not what I sent you guys earlier. It is the Chronicles of Narnia series, but specifically The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I really do enjoy them all. You said this earlier, and it makes me want to ask you how you did it. But so my son fairly recently read them, maybe a year ago, 2 years ago. Do you guys, I read them the way he wrote them,
Yes, I don't do chronologically.
But there are some people that swear by reading them chronologically. Did y'all read them the way he wrote them?
Yes.
I don't know. I read them the way I read them, where I started with The Magician's Nephew.
Then you read them chronologically.
Read it chronologically.
Okay.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. But they're all so great. But Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, the way he sets the world up is just beautiful. And I've got a love for C.S. Lewis. And so, yeah. But Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, Chronicles of Narnia. I even liked the film adaptations of the three that they adapted to film.
I only watched two.
They're fine. If mm-hmm. you go in as like a purist, hoping for them to capture every word and thought and image that you had while reading, they'll let you down. But they're fine.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed the two that I saw.
Yeah.
What was the third one again?
The Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Or Prince Caspian.
Caspian is second. Yeah, yeah, I had them mixed like into one. But
one of my tattoos, yeah. I can't see my camera right now, so I have no idea what you're seeing, but I'm pointing at one of my tattoos from The Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
You don't want to know what we're seeing.
Oh man. I heard they were doing a horse and his boy and it never materialized.
Like, Chronicles of Narnia adaptation rumors are almost as frequent as Jennifer Aniston being pregnant. Like they're just there's always one out there that there's a show coming or this coming or that coming, and I don't know. But the ones they did were fun.
Apparently sometimes it's true.
Mm-hmm. My favorite of those was actually The Last Battle. I don't know why, but it's the one that I made the most sense of the allegorical nature of his books.
Okay.
Like I automatically knew it was, you know, Revelation and yeah.
Rock on.
It just made sense. Okay. My number four is a little bit cheating. Evan called me out earlier for not selecting like individual books whenever I initially made my list. I was just putting kind of series, but this one I couldn't narrow it down. And part of it is because I read them now 10 years ago and I read them very quickly. And so I don't remember what exactly went on in the individual books, but this is Song of Ice and Fire, the Game of Thrones books. The first four, I think, is it what he's written, or is it five? I don't remember. Anyway,
I had thought it was five. It might just be four. Winds of Winter, I thought was number six, but it might be five.
I don't remember. Anyway, they're not done yet. And so I got real antsy, I guess, whenever I was reading them, but I read them in between the first season and the second season of the show and loved them. They were great. They were very in-depth. There are a billion characters in them. It is like most things, I would say the book is better than the show. The show is pretty good about following the books until the end of season two, and then it changes up. And there are some things that are bigger deals in the books and not big deals in the books, like the Red Wedding, totally not even a big deal in the book, because you don't get to know what's his face Stark, like that Stark. He's just kind of, yeah, Tony Stark. No. So his characters are basically first person in different chapters, and he never has that brother as...
Are you talking about Rob?
Rob. Yeah. Rob never is the lead in a chapter. And so you just don't... he's just a background character almost. And so when he dies, you don't feel much about it. It's just... I mean, it's indignation that they are attacking and like backstabbing, but it wasn't the wedding was not even shown in first person. It was just told about.
Right. So I had watched that season before I had read that book. And so it was, I guess I still kind of felt like it was that big of a deal because that was my experience with it.
Well, in the show, we had a big, like, just at the time it was cheap, like big tube TV, like big 50 something inch, and I threw my water bottle at it and left a little dent in the corner. I know. I was mad. I was real mad.
It was rough. By the way, there are currently 5 books. It was Game of Thrones, Clash of Kings, Storm of Swords, Feast for Crows, and A Dance with Dragons. Okay. And Winds of Winter is forthcoming.
Yeah. So if you're worried about not wanting to read the book because you've watched the show, don't necessarily worry about that. It's different enough, and there are different characters and lots of different things going on to where you don't have to worry about it. And the end of the show, he hadn't even finished the book yet. So even if it goes the same, you're going to care differently about it because it'll be explained differently.
Yeah, interestingly enough, bigger books intimidate me. And part of having the Kindle, I've started books without realizing how big they are. and I've stuck with them. So Brian Sanderson, which James, you'll talk about in a minute. Same with him. Like, I want to read some of his. I'm a little intimidated by length of, you know, starting this big, huge thing. But Game of Thrones is on that as well. Of like, I want to. And maybe now that I'm in the Kindle, maybe that'll be what it takes to do it.
There you go. I didn't really think about that, but I guess that's true. Because I read on the Kindle a lot too, and it does mess with your idea of not dimension, but I guess of length.
Well, even like take my favorite book, the Bible. I have a copy that has normal margins, normal font size, no verses. It's 12 inches wide. It's 6 volumes, but it messes with my brain just because it looks differently. Our brains are not as, maybe they're more powerful than we think. Maybe we're not as smart as we think we are, but our brains are smarter than we realize they are. But yeah, it messes with you. And looking at a big, huge book compared to looking at a Kindle is,
I don't feel the same. I finished 3 of these in a month and a half.
See, I wouldn't even open that.
Yeah, because you are a fast reader. I'm a pretty slow reader.
I am. I'm pretty slow, too. I'm a faster reader than I am.
I read a little bit faster than if I was just reading out loud.
A little bit faster now.
1,306 pages.
When I'm reading, my inner voice is me reading. Right. Like, I know I've come to understand that a lot of people, whenever they're reading, will just basically
visualize,
pick up the words and know what they're saying. But I have that inner voice that is reading every single word. And it sounds like I'm reading out loud, but it's a little bit faster than if I was reading out loud.
The inner me is the inner me. The inner me is the inner.
Evan, do you read like that? Do you have an inner voice when you read?
I do. Now, I will say, I think I get lost in books that I'm, but like, especially if I'm reading a denser book, it sounds in my head. It's weird to even try to articulate what's happening inside my head, but it sounds in my head like I'm reading out loud, but I'm reading a tad bit faster because I don't have to take breaths.
Yeah, that's exactly my experience.
So for the record, I don't have that. Sometimes I don't even perceive I'm reading the words until like I'm visualizing what is going on.
Yeah. Amy's the same way. I think Jeff is the same way. I think a lot of people are like that. And I didn't realize that was even a thing until pretty recently. I thought everybody was reading.
Fiction gets me there where I am lost and I'm not even realizing I'm reading words. I've done it with Avatar. That I'm like, oh, I'm not looking at words anymore. I'm watching in my head, which I'm really interested. This is another opportunity for me to read a book, have all the characters painted in my head, and now they're going to come out with a TV show and ruin all that.
Okay.
What book are you talking about?
It's A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Oh, okay.
Ferryman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah Moss or whatever.
Yeah. Sir J. Moss. Ferryman.
All right, we're gonna move
They're
on now.
Beasts. That's how Carol describes them. Beasts.
My number 4 is the fourth. So I debated with myself as to whether I should include a multiple book story, and then after seeing your list, I was like, okay, not a problem at all. And so like the no side lost, and because while it is in multiple books, the Mistborn trilogy is just one big story. You cannot read The Final Empire and call it a day. You have to keep reading. Now, I mean, some threads are tied up in each book, but the story is not until Hero of Ages. And there are other series where each book is clearly telling a single story, even if it contains elements that are overarching, like the Chronicles of Narnia. But anyway, I don't want to get too much into this one, just because I know that John has started it, and I don't want to give anything away other than to say that Brandon Sanderson is the king of creating magic systems and is a master world builder. His action sequences are solid. The intrigue is engaging. And I know people dunk on his prose, but I like that it's not super flowery. It's easy to read, and the dialogue also feels natural. But this book, the Mistborn trilogy, takes place in the Cosmere, which is basically a universe that Sanderson created that encompasses a lot of his books, including Elantris, the Stormlight Archives, Stormlight Archive. And each of those books takes place on a different world in that universe, in the Cosmere. But, and the other thing I will give away and say, because I've already mentioned it to John, my favorite character in the Mistborn trilogy is Sazed. But yeah, love the Mistborn trilogy.
All right, well, we're in series. And so my next one, my third, is Harry Potter series. But specifically, if I had to pick one, I think I'd go Order of Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Not only does it introduce this great thing, we also have Dumbledore's army. And we also have maybe the least likable character in anything I've ever read.
Oh, yes.
Dolores Umbridge. I've never had a book character. So I read these as an adult, probably 9 years ago. We started them in fourth grade. A kid, when they came out, a kid's mom complained we were reading witchcraft. They quit reading them. I never read another page until I was in my 20s, my mid-20s. And so I read them. I would read one, watch the movie, read two, watch the movie, read three. And so I'd never read a book that a character made me so anxious when she entered the scene. She makes my blood boil. And there's zero redeeming quality. And there's something to that of just making a dislikable fiend. So yeah, Order of Phoenix, if I had to pick one, but the Harry Potter series all together is just so great.
The first time I read that, it frustrated me just a little bit. Like as a, I don't know how old I was, 14-year-old maybe. Like I could read Harry being angry and I was like, he's so angry. But then like looking back and rereading it several times after that, it totally makes sense. He's traumatized by just witnessing the death of Cedric Diggory and the rebirth of Voldemort. Like, of course he's angry and traumatized. He's telling the world something that he witnessed and saw, and nobody's believing him. So, yeah, I just wanted to, in case you haven't read it from that lens,
and
you need to make sure that you read it from the lens of trauma.
The one person who he wants to lean on, Dumbledore won't even look at him.
Yeah.
The whole it's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one.
The more times you read it.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
All right. My number three. So with my first two, they're both fantasy books. Change it up just slightly and going with sci-fi now. This is a book that I picked up once again after I watched the movie and at the recommendation of our dear friend Jeff. This is Dune. Exposition is one of my favorite things in books, movies, whatever. Like, I just love getting brought into a new world and having to find my way in this world is awesome. And Dune does this fantastically. My favorite part of the book is like the first third of the book where they're just kind of like going through the different like political religious themes, and you are like having to dive into what this this means for the characters. So I loved this book. The rest of the book was fantastic as well, where it gets into, you know, it kind of has some, not kind of, it definitely is fully like entrenched in religious and political climate of the greater universe that this takes place in, with like a savior kind of character and what that means and whether that's good or bad and him grappling with it and everything. So really fantastic. The second movie is coming out this weekend.
And me, hey, and Carol, do we have a group for that?
I don't know if we do. Carol and I plan on going on Sunday though, because that's when we could get a babysitter. And so we're going like Sunday at 2:00, but I'm really excited. I heard that the rest of the series is iffy. Like the second and third get weird, and then it picks back up really well with like the fourth and fifth books. But I just kind of Wikipedia'd them and did some spark notes on those because I wasn't interested in getting into all 9 books or whatever if I wasn't enjoying all 9 books. But the first one, fantastic. Highly recommend. And it's a relatively quick read.
Yeah, but it's also surprisingly dense.
Yes. No. I mean, you're right. It is.
All right, so my number 3, the first time I read The Thief of Always was, I want to say it was in the 5th grade. And I've read it several times since. And I get something different out of it every time. And sure, it's a children's book also, but, and can easily be read in an afternoon, but it's also kind of dense, right? And Clive Barker labeled it a fable. And so there's clearly some message or some messages or whatever that he wants you to get out of it. And then I read it before I even knew who Clive Barker was and his more famous works like Hellraiser. And it's nowhere near as gory, but it is just as imaginative. And it follows. Have y'all ever heard of The Thief of Always?
No, I haven't.
So it follows this 10-year-old boy, Harvey, who is bored with life. Like it starts with the great gray beast February swallowed him up, basically, because he's just bored. February sucks because the shininess of Christmas is now past and summer is so far away now. But he's visited by some interesting character who tells him of a place where pretty much all dreams are possible, the Holiday House, where all 4 seasons occur every day, as well as Halloween and Christmas. But of course, not all is well, and our protagonist learns the hard way that sometimes what you have is enough, and waiting for better and brighter days isn't always healthy when you're living those days now. It's a wonderfully delightful book, even if it is a little bit more on the dark side, because Clive Barker is a horror author. But this really isn't a horror book. I wouldn't call it exactly horror. There's scarier stuff in Harry Potter, but it is still a dark-ish, kind of a dark fantasy for kids. Mm. But it's not dark, if that makes any sense. But it's still, I love it. I'm going to read it again soon, because you can read it in a few hours. John, you could probably read it in 2.
Yeah, I don't think I've gone down that genre very much. I read Neil Gaiman's got some darker themes and some things. Ocean at the End of the Lane, Neverwhere. But outside of Neil Gaiman, I can't believe, I'm not ashamed of myself. I blame John for this when he said books instead of narrowing them a little bit. But I'm now ashamed I don't have a Neil Gaiman book on my...
I considered it. In fact, I considered Ocean at the End of the Lane.
I would have gone with Norse mythology, but yeah.
I have not read
anything he's ever read or anything he's ever written.
Smoke and Mirrors. Writes,
fun fact, he buys in specialty stationery shops. He likes to buy like high-end journals, and then he'll save them until he finds a book that he wants to write, and he writes his books by hand in a journal. No editing. So he said he thinks deeply about what he wants to write, and then he'll write the entire page at a time. But when I listened to this interview, which was a number of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, he had one journal that he had bought like 7 or 8 years before the interview, and he still had not found a book worthy of this quality of a journal. So he hadn't written anything in it yet, but he was waiting to find me.
Wow. I want to read that book.
I just can't believe I didn't put Neil Gaiman on here. Okay.
Well, it actually, interesting. So The Thief of Always kind of has that same vibe that Coraline has, that dark child's book.
Yeah.
Speaking of Neil Gaiman.
My number two. So in seminary, I was forced to read a bunch. So I read a ton, but it wasn't stuff I was choosing to read. It wasn't always enjoyable. And so when I got out of seminary, again, I went into a slump, just didn't read very much. And so a few years after I finished in 2017, I made a New Year's resolution to read 50 books in a year, which is a dumb resolution to make when you read, you know, zero by choice the year before. I maybe read 5 the year before, but I said, I'm going to read 50. And I don't think I read 20. So in 2018, I said, no, I'm going to read 50 this year. And I did. But part of what I did was I said, I'm going to go back and read all those books that you're supposed to read in high school. And I'm going to read them now. And so I read Animal Farm. I read Catch 22. I read 1984, all those books. But a couple that stood out from that year, the first one was To Kill a Mockingbird. It was phenomenal. It was so stinking good. I mean, there's a reason why we still read it and kids are still assigned it.
Not also, all states are reading it now.
I hate racism, and that's why I loved it. But no.
Some people love it, and that's why they're banning it.
Some people do love racism, and we call those people racists. PDUSA on TikTok has a great little skit he does with himself, where he calls a man racist and he says, I'm not racist. And he says, that's what a racist would say. But To Kill a Mockingbird was just so good. So that was a real treat from my year of reading all the books I should have read in high school.
There you go. To Kill a Mockingbird was one of the few books that I actually did really enjoy being forced to read in high school.
The only two I read in high school, The Things They Carried and Tuesdays with Maury, both fantastic books. But the only two books I read in high school.
I read all my high school books. And I read all of the short stories in the textbook, too.
Just for fun?
Yeah. While the teacher was talking, I just would read it.
That sounds about right. I hope your students do that to you, too.
That's what I did. You know what? That's how I learn. I learn by reading. Things can go one ear and out the other. But if I see it, if I'm looking at it on paper, I've learned it.
There's a word for that. Do you know it?
No.
You're an autodidact.
Autodidact?
Didact.
Didact.
D-I-D-A-C-T. So you teach yourself, and usually through reading.
Oh, nice.
An autodidact.
Nice. I was just, I mean, as a teacher, you learn like the different types of learning, but it's not like specific like that. It's like visual, audio, tactile, whatever. All right. My number two is an author that has already been on this list. This is by Brandon Sanderson, the king of world building and exposition. And there's no greater exposition book that I've ever read than In the Stormlight Archive. It took me like 500 pages to understand what the heck was going on in this world. And I'm so glad I stuck with it, because this series is really, really good. The first book, James, what's the first book called?
Way of Kings.
Way of Kings. Okay. Hold on 1 second, because I goofed on mine. I remember what the Words of Radiance. Okay. So my thing looks a little different because I accidentally put the first book instead of the second book. So Way of Kings is a fantastic book, and it really drew me into the world. There are some characters in there that you start caring deeply for, and you get really excited, and he does a good job of like making you feel really great about something and then like immediately punching you in the gut and kind of taking it back a little bit, but keep continuing to draw you into this story. and this world. The second book, called Words of Radiance, is my favorite in the series so far. I will say these books are a little bit of an endeavor to get through because they're about 1,300 pages a piece. There are four out so far out of I think he has said that he's going to have 10 by the end.
Yeah, there are a couple of smaller books.
Yeah. And each book
they go in between.
Yeah, each book is like five books put together. Yeah. So it's like it literally says book one, book two, book three. And then there are like interludes in between that bring some different characters. But in Words of Radiance, that is probably my favorite book ever. Like you've gotten to know the characters. You're really excited. Then in the second book, he brings in my least favorite character out of the first book and makes her into a real BA and like really makes you root for her and show you how tough she is and all this stuff. And it ends with like this massive battle that I'm not going to spoil too much, but it really is awesome. And I'm not even going to tell you who wins because you'll have to read to figure out. Good. But
sorry, go ahead.
You learn so much more about the world. The third book, by the way, I'll tell you a little bit about the third book. The third book, so this, even though I think the second book is my favorite individual standalone book, the third one, Oathbringer, is the one that I feel like pushes the entire, like, okay, now I understand how there are going to be 10 books in this series, and I'm so excited to read them.
Rock on. Now, you haven't read Rhythm of War yet?
No, right, I haven't.
You just finished Oathbringer?
Yeah, I was going to do that this summer because I know that the fifth book is coming out in December, or supposedly is coming out in December. And so I didn't want to do all of them right now and then have to wait a year.
Cool.
I could go on a little bit more, but I also don't want to ruin it for anybody who is looking for a good long book to get into.
Speaking of good long book to get into, I went through a phase like 25 years ago where I could not get enough of all things Japan and Japanese. And this was before anime was as mainstream as it is now. I mean, it was around and there was a lot of it, but it was still kind of niche. And you were a nerd if you watched it. And the old man was a big nerd, and he kind of acted as sort of a dealer and enabler for me. But my main interest was in feudal Japan, the daimyos and samurai, their code, their customs, their art, their architecture, all of it. I loved it. Actually, that movie, The Last Samurai, gets kind of a bad rap. I love that movie.
My best friend growing up was Japanese, and after we watched that movie, we decided we would take a gap year after high school to become samurai in Japan, but we didn't, so I'm still not a samurai.
That's too bad. Well, I love feudal Japan. I still love it, but I'm not as hyper-fixated on it as I once was, but my hyper-fixation came about not because of The Last Samurai, like yours, but because of the book Shogun by James Clavell. My best friend let me borrow it, and I spent the next few weeks reading it and absolutely loving it. And I say weeks because it is another huge book. It's about 1,200 pages, and I don't read super fast. But it's a fictionalized account of actual historical figures, loosely based. William Adams was a real Englishman who came, like the first Englishman in Japan, and the character in the book is John Blackthorne, who is an English pilot on a Dutch ship that barely made land in Japan before everyone on board starved, and he gets taken in by Toranaga, who is loosely based on Tokugawa of the Tokugawa shogunate. But Toranaga is one of like the five regents vying for power. And because he thinks that Blackthorne will come in handy in his machinations, he keeps a hold of him. But Toranaga is a pretty great guy. Even in his manipulations, he really is working for the good of all and himself. But he's a pretty good guy. And there's a ton that happens, a lot of political intrigue, battles, and love. It's got it all. There was a miniseries in the 70s, and I have a box set of that, and I really do like it, but it doesn't hold up that well over time. But I was so very excited about the new limited series on FX that started this week. And it's probably actually the thing that I've been most excited about this year as far as TV and movies go, because I love Shogun so much. I've already watched the first two episodes, and it's excellent so far. I've noticed a few liberties taken, but they work. And so I'm really looking forward to finishing that. But Shogun is my number two book.
Nice.
Sounds like a miniseries I want to watch, but a book that I'm not going to read. So my number two, because my number one is the Bible, is from my same year of reading classics, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. So I've never read the book, had no clue what was going on, and I see my good friend Jeff, one of the fellow friends who likes stuff. We're chatting, what are you reading comes up, and I said, oh, I'm reading The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. And he said, oh, how are you liking it? Dude, it's so great. They're becoming best friends through the fence. I can't wait to see where this friendship goes. And then I finished reading it. And I saw Jeff the next time, and I was like, dude, what the heck? And he was like, I couldn't tell you. I had to let you just find out on your own. But yeah, devastating and beautiful and, gosh, just heart-wrenching, but such a well-written book. Yeah, Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
So I've never read the book, but I watched the movie, and it was tough.
I don't know that I'd want to visualize it. I think I'll just read it. I don't know that I want to see it visually represented. I'll put it that way. I don't know
right.
if I want to see it so in TV or movie.
Your imagination doesn't make things worse?
No. I mean, this, I don't know if you can make this one worse. So, well, I mean, I think we're out of the jurisdiction on the spoiler alert, but
2 weeks.
Yeah. Those that haven't read it, you should. And those that have know that it would be hard to imagine it worse than the way it's written. And actually maybe why it's so devastating, because it's just kind of a, you know what happens, ... Yeah. And you fill in the blanks with the worst possible scenarios. The worst possible scenario.
Yeah.
Yep. That's one that I spark noted, read the synopsis. It's hard for me. So yeah, I'm such a fantasy and sci-fi nerd that it's hard for me to pick up a book that hits a little too close to home.
Yeah. No fairies in this one.
Well, on that downer.
Yeah. All right. My number one also has death. It is Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, immediately following Order of the Phoenix. Yeah, it's a good book. As y'all know, I was going to put Harry Potter for all of mine, but Evan made me choose one, and this is probably the one that I remember reading the quickest and being super, super interested in what was happening, because you finally kind of see, you start putting some of the pieces together that are going to be super important whenever Deathly Hallows comes in, and you're seeing all of the different pieces. And on top of that, once I read this one, this is when all of the Harry Potter theory, like conspiracy theory stuff, exploded. Like before this, you knew it was going to be another school year. You knew, okay, what's going to happen in the next school year? Like you could make some guesses, but after this one, it was like, everybody was like, oh, this is going to be important. And this. And it was just really fun getting excited about Deathly Hallows before it came out. I don't know. I guess that may be why it was my favorite.
Yeah. It's tricky when you write a long series to imagine that 5, 6, and 7 are the best. Like they just keep getting better. Mm-hmm. And darker, and you know, we've only let my oldest read through book 4, because really, yeah. Cedric Diggory's death begins a really dark mm-hmm. turn in the series.
Yeah,
but yeah, 5, 6, and 7, Half-Blood Prince is so good.
Agreed. So my number one is another trilogy. And not only is it my favorite book, but it is also written by my favorite author, Stephen R. Lawhead. And one did bring about the other. It became my favorite book, and then he became my favorite author. But it's the Song of Albion trilogy, which follows Lewis, an American studying at Oxford, and he and his friends see a story about the carcass of a legendary creature from Celtic mythology. And so they follow it until they end up in a different world of ancient Celts and magic. And the dude's kind of pudgy, just a normal pudgy dude. But over the course of time in this new land, in this new world, he becomes a ripped warrior. His companion in this land is a bard named Tigid, who I absolutely love and might be my favorite character in the books. And he's less of a D&D bard, but rather is kind of an ancient druid. But again, not a D&D druid, like no shape-shifting or anything here. It's like Celtic druid. But the first and third books are narrated by Lewis, who becomes Lou. And the second is narrated by Tigid. Crazy crap happens. Lots of intrigue involved here, too, by those seeking power and love. It's Celtic Shogun. I mean, not really, but kind of. Long-time friends know that my trash email account is Lou323, and my gamer tag is Lou Emrys. And that does come from this book and another Lawhead book series. And it's been over 10 years now, I think, since my last read of it. So I think I should start that again soon. I just need to decide which copy to read because I have 4 different editions. But the Song of Albion trilogy, absolutely love it. Any honorables?
Probably too many. I did enjoy the Witcher series. I will say, like, they're a little bit easier reading and easier getting into because you don't have to have an incredible amount of exposition to understand it and background. So I'll say those if you're looking for just a real quick pick up, put down fantasy read. Those are good. And then I have a bunch from different ages that I'm not going to go over.
My big honorable would probably be Fourth Wing series. Loved it. It's just, I read it so recently. It's hard for me to stick it up there with books that I've read multiple times over the years, classics for, you know, the past decades. Right. So it's hard for me to throw a brand new book that I read 2 months ago, but did really enjoy them.
So As I was reading them, I enjoyed it. Getting past it and looking back on it, and then and actually having read The Way of Kings since then, I'm like, that's really not that great writing. Now, the story
actually pretty bad.
I was getting in, like, the story I was getting into, I like the plot and where it was going in some places. I didn't love the spicy bits, but. Do you have any more? I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Evan.
No, that's my honorable.
All right, I have a whole list. One book that I feel awful was that did not make my list. I really wanted to put it on my list, but the 5 that I have on here need to be on here. But Everything Sad Is Untrue is so good.
James, today, yes, we were driving, my wife and I. And I was like, what is that book? I read it at the same time as James. It's not All the Light We Cannot See. What is that stinking book called? Everything Sad Is Untrue. Yes, you're right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. God, that was such a good book.
It is so great. Another book that actually makes you hungry, the way he describes the food. But it's a nonfiction. Love Does is on my list. The Pendragon Cycle is another Stephen Lawhead series where I get the second half of my gamer tag, the Emrys, from the character Myrdan Emrys. The Stand and Green Mile are the 2 Stephen Kings that I love. A Time to Kill, so good. I Am the Cheese. Talking to Strangers, Malcolm Gladwell. Mm-hmm. And because I know that you loved it so much, Flowers for Algernon.
Yeah, there were a lot of books. I looked at my watch because I can see my text messages in there. The other author that I want to give honorable mention to, just because I think more people should read him, is Eric Larson. He does history, but in a narratival way. Like, he writes beautifully, but he does two stories at the same time. So, for example, his most famous book, Devil in the White City, is the story of the Chicago World's Fair and H.H. Holmes, the first serial killer in America. And he writes these stories side by side. He does one called Last Wake about the last sailing of the Lusitania, and he follows a family on the Lusitania and the German U-boat submarine driver that sank the Lusitania. He does a really good one called In the Garden of Beasts, but Eric Larson is just phenomenal. There's hundreds of behavioral economic type books, Malcolm Gladwell type books that certainly were great, but yeah, too many to mention, but Eric Larson, everybody should read.
I'd never heard of him, but that sounds so interesting.
Devil in the White City is where I'd start. That's probably his most famous, but Garden of the Beast is maybe my favorite.
Well, Phyllis, that was good. We're going to have to revisit some of these and maybe narrow down different ways that we can categorize different books, because I know that we all have separate lists for each type of book.
There really Bible needs books. To be a term for that, a term for different type and style of and subject matter of books.
James?
What?
Just say it.
Genre.
All right. Well, that's a wrap. That's a wrap for this one.
As always, let us know what yours are.
We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. And you can also email us at fwlspod@gmail.com. You can tell us what book you're reading, and maybe we'll try to read it. And maybe, hopefully, you read some of the ones that we suggested.
You can also watch us every Thursday evening on Twitch, which tomorrow is Thursday, not when you're listening to this, we're going to be playing some virtual board games.
Woohoo!
So join us next time as we dive into a new list with another friend or two.
Until then, keep exploring and enjoying the stuff that you're passionate about. Thanks for being a friend who likes stuff.
Bye!
That was weird.